have to say something to you, Anthony. Doing this show, it's like the best. It's like the best part of my week. I get excited about doing the PDP. I love it. Like last night, I'm like hanging around, finishing up a shift from minor league baseball. Wrote a story about a kid in the Yankee system, and like, you know, it's cool. Like they get their people, and we have our people out here in this region of the country, and nobody cares about our people, but we get to talk about our people and do that kind of stuff. I enjoy it. I like
and to talk about our people with other people.
Yeah, with other
who
people.
Want to talk about our people.
Exactly. And we're going to do that today. Today's guest, Tom Lay of Deadspin.com. I guess you don't really have to say .com. Everybody knows what Deadspin
.com.
Is. Tom Lay is going to join us, a Denver area guy who has made good on the big stage. My, say, Tom Lay is out there in New York City working on the big medium. Huh?
I've been down the polo grounds. I'm not about a kid named
Cover on the beach. But Tom's going to join us today. Rockies fan, Denver sports fan. We're going to talk with Tom. We're going to talk a lot of Rockies with Tom. We're also going to talk about, you know, just what it's been like for him as a Denver guy trying to carry that flag for a national media outlet. Although, to be fair, Deadspin's like a good media outlet, so
yeah.
It's not really like, you know, he's trying to fight to get the Rockies coverage on ESPN.com. But Tom Lay is going to join us today, so we're really excited for that. Also, today we were brought into the show by our good pals. Jake Shapiro actually was the one who suggested the submission for this week's show, and we were brought in by the band All Night featuring Laura Brem, their song Mile High. This is the Holiday Rain remix of that song, and I really dig this song, and it has some very Colorado-themed lyrics, which I enjoy, such as, quote, "We are a mile high every night." I like it. So big thanks to those guys for sending in the music for episode number 48 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast, and what's our Memorial Edition today? I think
this
I know.
This one is very, very easy. You'll know him as the guy who broke his leg and still tossed six innings on it. The one,
I was at
the only,
game.
The man, the myth, the legend, Jason Hirsch, everybody.
Friend of the PDP!
Friend of the PDP,
Jason Hirsch.
We actually have some interesting names on this list, but easy. This one's easily Jason Hirsch. That's not even a thing.
The Jason Hirsch Memorial Edition.
Unless you wanted to do Boone Logan for the
48
edition. He's been great.
You know, it's sad. By the time we get to episode 148, he probably will be the one because he'll just be in, you know, he'll be in Rocky's lore. As
he'll be in all the record books. Worst ERA in Rocky's history.
It's headed that way. Who else we got on this list?
Will Harris, who's actually having a very, very good season in the Astros bullpen. ERA still under one, I believe, with a lot of strikeouts. So
good.
It's going to be let get away there.
That's good.
Esmil Rogers, who is still pitching. He had it for 3 years from 2010 to 2012. Then, of course, Jason Hirsch. Byung-Hyun Kim in 2006. Tim
the
Olsen.
Greatest. He is the Rockies version of Bartolo Colon swinging.
Oh, when he was batting? Oh,
yeah.
My God.
Remember when he used to jump and swing at the same time?
Yes.
It was amazing.
His at-bats were must-see TV.
Yeah. Yes, they were.
Then we got a lot of guys who I'm pretty sure, like, I'm just making these names up on the spot. Tim Olsen, Mark Kroon, Mike James, Chris Nickding, and Craig House,
totally.
Who we mentioned last night on the
Yeah. TV. How weird. Craig House was 48.
Yeah.
Weird.
Maybe it should be the Craig House edition.
It's a Jason Jennings, or it's a Jason Jennings. It's a Jason Hirsch Memorial edition with the Craig House vice presidency. For episode
yes.
number 48. Craig House, the reason we brought him up last night, Carter Capps, who is the Marlins reliever who jumps off the rubber. Craig House did that. Craig House is the OG rubber jumper. He used to jump off the mound. And somebody tweeted at us last night, that dude would throw 101 miles an hour and had no idea where it was going.
No
and that
clue
was Craig
whatsoever.
House in a nutshell.
Yeah.
I remember watching him warm up one time from the little railing above the bullpen with my friend Travis Owen. And that was 15-ish years ago. And we have talked about Craig House at least once a baseball season since then because it was just the weirdest thing that, like, two 14-year-olds like us had ever seen.
Yeah.
Very strange.
And, like, one of those guys, like, for me was Juan Murillo. Do you remember
yeah.
him? He threw, like 114
yeah,
miles an hour.
He did.
And just had no idea.
Juan,
no idea at
he
all.
He showed up. I was working an Eastern League game back in 2012, and Juan Murillo showed up. Juan Murillo was a very highly touted prospect in the system
yeah.
for a while. The Rockies signed him, I believe, as a he was actually looks like an 18-year-old when they signed him.
He was kind of going to be with that Ubaldo, Franklin,
right,
Juan Murillo,
exactly.
like all those Latin guys coming up at the same time, going to you know change the Rockies' fortunes.
He was would have been 24 during the – well, he was 24, not that he would would have been. He was 24 during the World Series run, and he actually made four appearances for that team during the 2007 regular season. But combined over four major league campaigns, he only made nine appearances and had an ERA of 13.5. But Murillo, I was working a game in 2012 in the Eastern League, and Juan Murillo just came out of the bullpen for the Reading Phillies,
and you're
the AA
Phillies.
I was like, wait a minute, what? Since when? What? It was very random. He had spent a couple years out of baseball. He played in the Dominican Winter League in 2010, did not play anywhere in 2011, and then in 2012 was back in the Philly system and then was gone. He actually was in the Orioles system last year and had a pretty decent year. He went 2-0 with a 4.67 ERA and 22 relief appearances for AA Bowie, but he was in AA at 30, you know.
By the way, Craig House in that 2000 season, 16 games for the Rockies, a 7.24 ERA. He had 11.2 walks per nine innings.
Awesome. That's good.
His FIP was 8.99.
That's good. That is really good at baseball. Oh,
wow.
Wow.
That's amazing. Huh. All right. A few other guys on this list. Frank Castillo, John Habion. Who does what? John Habion.
How do you spell
AJ
that?
And A.J. Sager. Also, Rigo Beltran.
I remember Rigo Beltran.
He was, I want to say, Lynchburg's pitching coach. In 2010.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right.
He was a University of Wyoming guy. I think he might have even played with Huey.
Weird.
At UW.
Weird.
He was on one of the last teams to play baseball at the University of Wyoming.
That's interesting.
Before they killed the program.
That's sometime we'll have to do a show about that because it's really sad that the state of college baseball around here because CU doesn't have a program. CSU has a very, very, very good, very successful club baseball program, but it's not a D1 program. University of Wyoming doesn't have a program. UNC is the biggest baseball school around.
I was going to say, it's all like
Greeley.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's cool, and UNC has been good from time to time, and they play big schools and games. The Rockies drafted a kid, Jensen Park, out of UNC, and I think the 32nd round this year was the WAC Player of the Year. But it's it's kind of a bummer that it's the first two. I was wandering around the University of Denver one day a few weeks ago trying to find a guy who I sort of work with to pick up some DVDs of lacrosse broadcasts I had done. But I just ended up wandering around Magnus Arena aimlessly. And they have a wall that lists all of the All-Americans in DU history. The first two All-Americans in University of Denver history were baseball players. And there hasn't been a baseball program at DU, I think, in like 50 years.
Jeez.
It's weird.
It is. Especially considering it's not like Colorado is starved for baseball.
Right.
They hold the JUCO World Series in Grand Junction every year.
Right.
And it's a huge deal.
It's very strange.
It is.
Very, very strange.
It is.
So anyway,
is the Jason Hirsch.
The Jason Hirsch Memorial Edition with honorable mention to good pal and Rockies legend Craig House. But before we get into talking a whole lot of baseball, since we've already gone way off the rails, shockingly, you went and saw Jurassic World last night at midnight. Are you awake today?
No. No, I'm not.
When we were getting ready to record, I sat down and I was looking through my text messages about the show, and I was like, hey, is 9:30 your time okay to get started? And then I thought, like, hey, man, if you went to see a movie at midnight, that means he probably wasn't out of there until at least 2:30, which means like
it was
by 3.
Yeah, and that's about right.
But how was it? How was Jurassic
Park? It was fantastic. I mean, I grew up a huge, huge Jurassic Park fan. It was probably my favorite movie growing up, probably still is, to be perfectly honest. Like, the first Jurassic Park was a huge, huge moment for me because I was such a dinosaur geek when I was little. And seeing that in the theater, when I was visiting my grandparents, actually, in Fort Myers, Florida, when I was 7 years old, seeing the first one, that was, like, changed my life completely. And
yeah,
it's funny, you watch it again, like, that was the first time that kind of technology had been used for those dinosaurs, and it still holds up to this day.
Yeah, it does. It's just amazing. That is the mark of a very, very good movie. Even like with the Star Wars movies, like that you can watch that and still sort of see, like, okay, well, this still kind of plays today, special effects wise and all that. And that's how it is with Jurassic Park. Like, you would have thought by now that you would have been able to, okay, it's animatronic dinosaurs, whatever.
Yeah,
but no, you really can't at all. It's amazing.
No, it's awesome. And the movie was very, very good. It was exactly what you'd want in a Jurassic Park movie. I loved all the little Easter eggs they would give out, for fans who are such huge nerds for the first one.
Nerd!
The little parts in all the movie where you can know they're at least hearkening back to the first couple of movies, which is really, really cool. So they realize where they came from, and they they definitely used that to their advantage in the movie. They didn't just diss it completely. It was a very good mix of what this movie could and should have been. It's been like 12 years since the last one, so they had a lot of time to figure it out. I think they knocked this one out of the park.
I'll be honest with you. The first one, obviously brilliant. But I saw the second and third one when they came out, and I remember thinking that they were bad then, and I just, like, wrote them off. But, you know, I would have been...
They're not that bad.
I would have been, like, yeah, like 13 when I saw The Lost World, I think.
Yeah.
And so maybe it was a decent movie. I don't know. I remember the third one started off very well, and then it just, like, plummeted, like, midway through the movie. But wasn't, like, Taya Leone in that one?
Yeah. That one, though, that's kind of like got the Godfather 3 kind of aura to it, where...
Yeah.
On its own, it's a totally fine movie, but you're comparing it to the first two, and that's just not going to help it at all.
Yeah, that's true. I'm going to go see Jurassic World, but I'm going to go see it on like a Tuesday afternoon at 1 o'clock where I'm not going to be around 8 billion people. By the way, if you ever visit here again, which obviously is not going to happen.
Never again.
We have to go to the Pavilions, and for those of you who are listening in the Denver area, did you guys all know that the Pavilions now has like full-on recliners at every seat? Seat. They must have taken out like three rows of seats because the rows
the PDP,
of seats are
sponsored
gigantic.
By Pavilions.
But like they're full on. Like you push a little button, the thing reclines all the way. It's amazing.
Wow.
It's amazing. Weird. Anyway.
It was like 4D movies now where they like rain on you when it's raining on the screen.
What?
And stuff. Yeah.
Is that really a thing?
That is a thing.
I thought about that when I was a kid once. I was like, you know what would be cool is like if they had, you know, like if you walk into a field full of flowers in a movie, it should smell like flowers in the theater.
And or if you're watching the first Jurassic Park and they get to the big pile of shit.
Yeah.
The movie just starts
reeking like
shit. Like
feces.
Yeah.
Stool.
There you go.
Dinosaur droppings.
dino droppings? All right, anyway.
So anyway, go see Jurassic World, apparently. Well, let's go. Let's talk a little Colorado Rockies baseball. Your Colorado Rockies have been, you know, as Anthony and I were talking a minute ago before we got into this segment, they've been playing well, and yet they haven't really been winning.
They've been playing well, but they haven't been playing well. Like, they took 2-3 from the best team in baseball, which is St. Louis Cardinals, and then they, like, can't beat the Marlins, you know?
Makes sense.
It's weird, because that whole homestand, the 5-5 homestand, you know, at the end of it, you're like, okay, well, wish they could have won a couple more. But then you look at it, they took 2-4, like they split with the Dodgers, especially considering that awful, awful game when they gave up the grand slam. They lost that game. Then you beat 2-3 against the Cardinals. But then, like, in the middle of it, facing two good teams, you face one of the worst teams in baseball in the Miami Marlins, and you get throttled, basically, in two of those games.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you got the game on Sunday where Bone Lagoon gave up the home run to Hechevarria. And it's tough to watch, man, because you see a guy like Tom Kohler in that first game of that series who dominated the Rockies in that game. And he looked very, very good doing it. You saw he had really good stuff. He threw in the mid-90s, got a good curveball, whatever. You go, okay, well, maybe he's just kind of figuring out as a pitcher. You know, sometimes you just got to tip your cap. And then you watch Tom Kohler pitch in his next start against the Blue Jays, and he gives up like 500-600-foot home runs. You're like, oh, okay, well, that's interesting. Or like last night, David Phelps, who I – pretty sure has never even seen the eighth inning before in his life, maybe once. He went tossed like 8 shutout innings against the Rockies last night and just dominated them completely with fastballs on the outside corner at 91 miles an hour, like he was some kind of starting pitcher Rafael Betancourt.
Yeah.
You know, it's those are the games that you got to scratch your head and go, what the hell's going on here?
Yeah.
Because you really, really have to wonder after some of those kind of games.
Yesterday was really frustrating. I was one of the – I mean, you could tell that game from very early on was not going to be their game. I mean, Cargo dropping that
absolutely
fly
not.
Ball
yeah.
in right field. The bunts that just, like, would hit that ridge down the line for swinging bunts and bunts would stay fair somehow for the Marlins. It was definitely one of those, like, oh, God, this is not going to be their day. One of those type of games. But it's, you know, you're going to have those games every once in a while. And Chris Russen, you know, didn't go out and throw great yesterday, but you're going to have clunkers. I mean, that happens. And he's already given this team way, way more than I think they could have expected out of him.
Yes.
You still have 3 more games in Miami. You still have a chance at a series win. Now you basically have to go out and sweep a series in order to get it. But, you know, I mean, they're 5 games under 500. They're 7.5 back in the division. They're in a tie for 4th place. They're only 2.5 games out of 3rd place, and they're only 5.5 games back of the wild card. And, oh, by the way, it's June 12th.
Yeah.
And that's what, you know, our good pals over at Rockspile tweeted yesterday. Like, you know, the Rockies are playing pretty well, and this really is not that bad of a season so far. And I responded, and they took it as sarcasm, but I meant it genuinely, kind of playing off of what we talked about with Corey Sullivan early on in the season. Every 10 games in Major League Baseball is the equivalent of one game in the NFL. So if you're looking at it right now, the Rockies are 27-32. They have played, you know, roughly 60 games. And that means that you're basically 3-3 right now.
We're still 22 games from the halfway point.
Right.
Like,
that is fine. All is well. It's fine. They're 5 games under .500. Nobody expected them to be 5 games under .500 right now. Everybody expected them to be the Milwaukee Brewers or the Philadelphia Phillies, who are respectively 23-38 and 22-39. Like, things are fine.
Yeah. Are they great? No. Can they be better? Yes. Is the sky falling? No.
Exactly. Could they be far, far worse? Absolutely.
Yes. This team is 5 games under .500, and they have an 11-game losing streak on their ledger this year.
Yeah.
You know?
That's pretty amazing.
That's tough to do.
Had they been able to stop that at 7 games, you know, you're looking at a totally different situation right now.
At a .500 team.
Right, exactly. And, you know, had Boone Logan not pitched in basically every game he's pitched
in. In every single game.
Then maybe
not pitched in every game.
That
maybe.
As well. Yesterday, not fun, but really quickly, I just want to point out how freaking good did Tommy Kahnle look yesterday?
That's what he can do. And
Kahnle was filthy.
And coming off the heels of the game on Wednesday against the Cardinals, where he gave the home run to Grichuk when he first came to the game. So I think he can be that guy. We saw him last year where he had flashes of this with the 95-mile-an-hour stuff and the good breaking ball. We saw that he can be that guy.
Somebody tweeted at us yesterday that Kahnle would probably benefit a little bit from backing off the velocity and trying to command things better. And I think that's a pretty good point about Kahnle. But when he gets to the point where he can command everything, if he starts revving it back up to 97, 98, I mean, that's what we saw a little bit of yesterday. That dude is nasty. He has nasty stuff.
I mean, he made Giancarlo look stupid.
Yeah, and that after never Giancarlo happens.
Paid us back.
Yeah, Chris Russon, by the way, the broadcast route noted yesterday that Chris Russon is the first pitcher ever to strike out Giancarlo Stanton 4 times in a game, which I guess is not entirely surprising since it's rare that happens anyway. But if you would have had that in the pool rather than like a, you know, Cole Hamels or Matt Harvey or somebody he sees on a regular basis, yeah, I don't think Chris Russon would have finished too high on that list.
I don't think so. Just throwing that out there.
So anyway, the Rockies 27-32, playing all right, but the first topic we want to dive into today is somebody who may be in a Rockies uniform soon. And that is one big, tall right-hander and PDP 47 guest, John Gray. John Gray, yesterday, a very, very good outing, the longest one of his professional career. Really, really exciting stuff from John Gray, who is, as it looks right now, on the doorstep of maybe making it to the big leagues. This is the final line on John Gray yesterday. 8 innings pitched for the first time in his professional career. 4 hits, 2 runs, both of them earned. He walked 3. He struck out 4. He threw 65 of his 100 pitches for strikes. Induced a lot of weak contact. He got more outs in the air than he did on the ground. I think about a 12-8 ratio there for flyouts to air outs. But still, that's just the latest in a series of steps forward. Basically, I think we have to stop talking about it as like, oh, John Gray's pitching pretty well. Now it's like April has become the anomaly rather than that being the constant and the rest of it being the anomaly.
It's been 8 straight starts for John Gray, 6 of them being your quote-unquote quality starts. In that time, he's lasted at least 5 innings in all of his last 8 starts. He has a 2.68 ERA in that time, 28 Ks, 13 walks, holding opponents to a 2.44 batting average in that time. And last night was kind of the first night I was able to actually sit and watch John Gray pitch an entire game. It was on MILB TV. I was waiting for Jurassic World to start, so I had some time to kill. The Rockies game had just finished. So I said, you know what? I'm going to do this. And I watched John Gray pitch the whole outing last night. And honestly, there's no reason why John Gray won't be in Denver next week for his next start. He had the look of a very polished, a very confident, and a very successful pitcher on the mound last night in Tacoma. It was, like I said, the first time I'd actually been able to sit down and watch it. It's early, and I was up late. Give me a break. I still have dinosaurs on my brain.
What have you literally had?
I literally have dinosaurs on my
brain. Literally.
Literally. But no, this was the first time I sat down and watched him from start to finish. And I was very, very impressed with John Gray. The unfortunate thing is they didn't have any kind of velo readings on the actual MILB TV broadcast, as it was an in-house feed from Tacoma, basically. So I couldn't really tell how hard he was throwing, but judging by the swings of the hitters, he was blowing it by some people. And his slider looked very good. He was able to attack hitters and counts with all three of his pitches. I think where he got hurt, where he gave up the two runs, just mislocation with the fastball. It was a couple of fastballs supposed to be on the outer half, you know, tail more toward the inner half to lefties, and they were able to get on him there. The couple of walks that he had three in the game, but I think a couple of those that I was able to actually notice, he got squeezed on a couple of those pitches. So it could have gone either way. He could have easily finished the game with one walk, I think, a couple of those pitches. So what we saw from John Gray last night and what we have seen since the beginning of May is very, very encouraging. And I think he's at the point where there's not a lot left for him to prove at the AAA level. And especially considering you've gotten what you need from Chris Russell at this point, there's a reason why he's been in the minor leagues for most of his whole career. He's a guy who throws 85 to 87 miles an hour, a little bit of a hook. He's got a little bit of the lefty guile to him, but he's not a consistent big leaguer, especially in a starting rotation. He's a guy you bring out of the bullpen, maybe give another team a different look after they had maybe a hard-throwing righty in the game. But Chris Russell is not a starter you want to rely on every fifth day. And I think he has done more than the Rockies could have possibly imagined at this point. But I think right now is your time that John Gray needs to come up and whatever Super 2 status be damned. I think we're even past that moment.
Yeah, we are.
I think we're definitely past that now. So John Gray needs to be the next call up the Rockies make. And I think he's ready.
As it stands right now, he would pitch, should he be promoted to the Major League organization, he would pitch on Tuesday in Houston, the 16th, right, which is a day game. It's a series finale against the Astros, sort of the series finale.
Second week in a row, John Gray will pitch for the Rockies in the upcoming week.
I'm just going to start making my prediction about Kyle Freeland every week from here on out now.
Yeah, it's worked out.
Why not?
So far, right? Yeah.
Why not? But 5 days away would be at Houston on the 16th. The Rockies then come home and they play Houston for two more. But John Gray, that would be really cool for John Gray too, because he's an Oklahoma guy, and that would be the shortest trip, I would imagine, for his family, or one of the shortest trips for his family to come down and check out his major league star. Not that the distance would really dissuade them, but the thing about John Gray.
I'm making my start in.
I don't know. I don't know if we can make it, John.
Field, mom and dad. Oh, sorry, too far.
After John Gray allowed at least four earned runs in each of his four starts this season, his first four starts this season, he hasn't allowed more than three earned runs in any start since then. We talked about how good his eight starts have been. In his last five starts, he's allowed seven earned runs over 34 and a third innings. That equates to a 1.83 ERA. So he's getting better as this stretch goes along. And the thing I really like, and the thing that suggests to me that the Rockies are on the verge of bringing him to the show, he's thrown a lot of pitches. 92 pitches on the 10th of May against Sacramento, then 96, 99, 98. He threw 88 in his best start of the year. That was against Omaha on the 31st at home at Albuquerque. Seven innings in that game. That was his one scoreless outing of the season. Four hits, two walks, five strikeouts. He threw 88 pitches in that game. Very, very efficient. 104 pitches his last time out against Iowa. That was a career high, and 100 pitches even last night, and he spread those over eight innings. So he's starting to be economical with his pitches. He's throwing a lot of pitches, and not in a bad way. He's throwing him, I think, in a, you know, they knew he was going to be a workhorse, and they're using him as that. And I think you're right. I mean, I think the moment is coming.
I think it needs to be. I think this Rockies team is, I think, somewhat outperforming what people thought they were going to be this year. I think five games under 500 in the middle of June is not the end of the world whatsoever. And I think this could be a big shot in the arm for a rotation that really hasn't been terrible lately in the last few weeks, with the emergence of Chad Bettis. David Hale has been very solid. De La Rosa has always had his moments. He's kind of what we always thought he is and what he always seems to be. But I think John Gray, if he is ready, and I believe he is, I think he can be a huge boost for this team. And it would get people talking about the Rockies again, especially in Denver. If he comes out, has a couple of good starts. We haven't really seen that from a big-time prospect, and especially a pitcher in the Rockies system. So I think the time is ready. Unless, the only reason I would say maybe they would wait is to get him a start at Coors Field, because after that, the Tuesday game where Russell is in the rotation, they come home for another eight games against the Astros, Brewers, and Diamondbacks. Three teams that aren't really, well, the Astros are a hitting team, but they also strike out a lot. So it depends. I'm not sure who, what they would want to do with him. If they want to get him a start at Coors Field, or if they want to make, put him on the road. So it's not that big of a deal, you know, or as big of a deal at least. So it's not going to be the crowd, you know, coming just to see John Gray pitch at Coors Field yet for his debut, of course. So he would be scheduled to pitch on Tuesday, but that is the last game of this road trip. So if he does do that and pitch on Tuesday, June 16th against the Astros, what are the over-under of how many times they're going to bring up Mark Brownson's debut? Mark Brownson, he had his big league debut back on July 21st, 1998 in Houston, through a complete game shutout, struck out 7 in that game, allowed just 4 hits. I think he was in front of his whole family and friends and everything at the Astrodome, yeah. And then after that, he only made, 8 more starts in his career after that.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, but whatever.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah. So I think John Gray will be in the big leagues next week, but like I said, it depends on where they want him to make his major league debut. If they want to do it on the road, where the stakes aren't as high, then that's fine. But, you know, there's a big homestand coming up against some teams that struggle to make contact with the ball consistently in the Astros and Brewers. So if they want to do it that way, then I can see that point as well.
You could, just brace yourself for the fury that will come from people. Like, I saw somebody tweet at, and I don't remember who the national writer was who retweeted it and said, "Are you serious?" But somebody tweeted at, it might have been actually at a White Sox beat writer or at an Astros beat writer. It might have been Evan Drellich or somebody like that. But somebody tweeted complaining about how the Astros promoted Carlos Correa when the team was on the road because they were, quote, robbing Houston's loyal fans of the ability to see his debut. Come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
Right. That's about right.
There's a really, really good piece today, as if we need to say a really, really good piece, but Matt Gross has a piece today on John Gray and what his latest start, juxtaposed with Chris Russon's start last night, what they mean going forward. Matt Gross, his stuff is always fantastic, so go check that out on purpleroad.com. But this is exciting. I mean, we're starting to get to the point now where, like I said, now it was April that was kind of the non-trend. He started slow. Now, over these last 8 outings, that's become the trend. That is the theme of this season for John Gray, and he's coming. He's coming. One guy who will not be in the rotation with him when he gets here is Eddie Butler. Eddie Butler was sent back to AAA Albuquerque last week, and this week, I guess. And the thing about Eddie, I think right now it's the right move. I mean, Eddie benefited from that I think toward the end of last season when he made that appearance in Colorado Springs and kind of got to see a little bit of advanced action against some guys who are more veteran. We've talked a bit how it seems like Eddie is not trusting how good his stuff is a lot of the time. Yeah. He's throwing a little bit, I don't want to say scared, but he's not attacking, I think, the way the Rockies really want to see him do that. And we've seen guys go to AAA and have a lot of success coming off of it for the Rockies. I mean, Tyler Matzek, obviously, this year has somewhat gone off the rails. But last year, being promoted and staying for a while in Colorado Springs and then coming up to the major league level, that was really, really beneficial for him. And he talked about how that was beneficial and how he knew he learned a lot in AAA that he would not have learned in AA. So I think that's something that could really benefit Eddie Butler. It's obviously disappointing to not see him just blow up right out of the gate into the guy that you expect and want him to be. But Eddie Butler's 24 years old.
Yeah.
So let's not burn down the bridges just yet and, you know, be freaked out about what's going to happen with Eddie Butler. He's 24. This time last year, people were saying the same exact stuff about Chad Bettis, what a bust he was, how terrible he was. And look at what Chad Bettis has turned into. Chad Bettis is 26. He was 24 on opening day last year. These guys sometimes take a little while to get it figured out at the major league level. That's how baseball works. Eddie's going to be fine, and you hope he gets the work that he does, that he needs in quick order down in Albuquerque, but he's going to be fine. He's 24.
And you see the flashes, which can frustrate a fan base, because even in that start against Miami he had on June 5th, the first inning, he went 1-2-3 and struck out Giancarlo Stanton with a 97-mile-an-hour fastball on the outside black. And you go, oh, okay, excuse me. Eddie Butler's here. And then in the rest of that start, he gave up 6 earned runs, season-high 11 hits, lasted only 5 1/3. Like, you know, so you see the flashes, and you say, oh, this is the pitcher that Eddie Butler can be. And that was coming off a very, very good start against the Phillies, where he went 6 innings, gave up 1 run on 4 hits. So you want to find that consistency, of course. I think that's the reason why they sent him back. And the dumbest part was that, you know, there's a quote that came out where Eddie said that, You know, they want to get me ready to go and back up to Denver for the playoff push, which, you know, that was like a feeding frenzy for stupid people online going, oh yeah, the Rockies playoff push. Oh, such delusional jackbags. Like, cause people still use jackbags, right? That's a thing.
Yeah, totally.
Is that a thing? That's a thing that I didn't make that up.
Why not?
It's like, but at the same time, what are they supposed to say? Like, yeah, we want you to go get your work. So when you're ready to come back, we're in, you know, August or September or whatever, late July. We hope to still be in the playoff push. I don't understand why people always freak out when the Rockies say something along the lines of like, oh, you know,
right.
Playoff tickets go on sale now or
right.
whatever, you know, that's
right.
What the hell are they supposed to say?
Exactly. They're just supposed to be like, they're supposed to issue press releases and say, we would like to today put playoff tickets on sale, being that we're sort of in contention, but we're the Rockies and we know that this won't happen. Yada, yada, yada.
Yeah. So, what are they going to tell Eddie? Hey, Eddie, we don't like what you're doing right now, so go back down and come back up, and we're 30 games under 500 in September.
Right.
What the hell are they supposed to say? Come on, get off it. So, no, I think it's good for Eddie right now. I think he needs to find some consistency and trust his fastball, man.
Yeah.
You got 97. You got to trust it. You got to pound the zone. You see what a guy like David Hale has done this year.
Right.
David
Just
Hale doesn't
strikes.
Have – he doesn't have better stuff than Eddie Butler
no,
at all.
Not at all.
At all. But – he throws strikes, doesn't walk people, and lets his incredible gold glove defense behind him, Willian Rosario excluded, make the plays. So,
because Willian's got a platinum glove. That's how good he is.
It's even better than gold.
There actually is a platinum glove award.
There is, yeah.
That Yachty wins like every year.
Yeah, who cares?
But no, I agree. I completely agree.
Yeah, it's you can see what you can do and have success here because – you know, David Hale wasn't really a highly touted guy coming over in that, you know, Chris O'Dowd trade. By the way, sorry, Chris O'Dowd, for your 80-game suspension.
Man, you got to be I have to tread lightly being an employee of Major League Baseball. But if you're the son of a GM or a former GM and you get banged for PEDs.
How stupid are you, dude? How dumb are you? Oh,
man,
my God.
Wowzers.
Like, that's incredible.
In case you did not hear, Chris O'Dowd, son of former Rockies GM Dan O'Dowd, banged 80 games for elevated testosterone levels. Suspended, I should say. I guess the normal public does not use the term banged the way that baseball employees do.
Yeah, but
So
anyway, David Hale has been fantastic so far. He's gone at least 6 innings in all 3 of his starts. He has 14 strikeouts and 0 walks. In 19 and 2/3 innings, spanning his 3 starts. 0 walks. Goose egg.
0.0. Yeah, that's massive. That is huge. And, you know, the Rockies have needed that. They've gotten good contributions in spots where they have sorely needed them from guys like David Hale, you know, from guys like Chris Russon. When they have needed somebody to step into a spot in the rotation and give them just something serviceable, they have been able to get those. And that is something that we have not seen basically at all ever. Chad Bettis has been the best among them. And I think Chad Bettis, you sort of looked at initially, or a lot of people sort of looked at initially as like, okay, he's another place filler in the rotation. Chad Bettis was the 5th ranked prospect in this organization going into 2014.
Yeah.
And he got screwed a bit by the move to the bullpen, didn't handle that well. But Chad Bettis is a very, very good talent. This is not just something where it's like, oh, this is a pleasant surprise from Chad Bettis. No, this is Chad Bettis. This is what Chad Bettis is supposed to be able to do.
Yeah.
So he's been the best among them. Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's been very, very fun to see. And if John Gray is in the rotation soon, oh, man, I'm getting excited at the idea of John Gray being up here. Just before we head into today's interview segment on the Jason Hirsch Memorial Edition of the PDP, we got to give credit where it's due in one huge spot, and that is 2 guys who you may have heard of on this roster, one Troy Tulowitzki and one Carlos Gonzalez.
Who?
They're pretty good at baseball. And they have been playing extraordinarily good baseball as of late. Cargo, for as bad as his start to the season was, I looked up the other day at Coors Field, and the dude was hitting .250. The average is down to .246 now. He went 0-for-4 yesterday against Miami. But in 10 games in June, This is the Carlos Gonzalez we remember. A 359 average, a 999 OPS. He's taken walks. He's walked four times already in the month. He's driving in runs. He's got six runs batted in. That's one shy of his season high for a month this year. 14 hits and 39 at-bats to start off the month. Troy Tulowitzki has been even better. He's batting 438 with a 1250 OPS, three homers and 12 runs batted in so far this season, or so far this month. So those guys are coming on, and that if the Rockies were able to hang around the 500 mark without those two playing well, and now those two are going to start playing well, and oh, by the way, maybe you're going to get John Gray in the rotation.
And Dick Mania's back.
Don't you start getting a little bit excited now?
And you got Nolan Arenado, who's okay at stuff.
He's not bad.
He's like fine at stuff.
And Ben Paulson hits 900 day to day. How much fun is Ben Paulson to watch?
Ben Paulson has been a revelation.
I love Ben Paulson.
All he's done is hit. Wherever he's gone.
All he does is hit, no matter what.
Get out.
He's OPSing 1040 in 24 games. 1040, Ben Paulson.
And
good gravy.
Right now, Kyle Parker has the best single-season batting average in Major League history.
What?
Hashtag free Kyle Parker.
Hashtag free Kyle Parker. He is a 1,000 hitter, Rockies. I can't believe Barack Obama did not respond to me yesterday when I asked him when he thought Kyle Parker was going to be permanently freed. Thanks, Obama.
Typical Beltway insider.
Thanks, Obama.
Yeah.
Libtards. Am I right?
Truck nuts.
So with that.
Also, by the way, DJ LeMahieu is still hitting 351.
DJ LeMahieu should be the starting second baseman in the All-Star game, and he's going to finish like 17th in the voting because fans are stupid.
Yes.
DJ's hitting 351. DJ
also, go vote for Nolan Arenado. Go vote for him.
Yeah. Go vote for Nolan. Go vote for DJ. Do it. Just do it. Even though voting is stupid. Voting is only stupid when you don't do it, because then you don't have the ability to bitch about
it. If you don't vote for Nolan Arenado, 50 Cent will shoot you in the head. Remember those Vote or Die campaigns?
Yeah. Yeah. Those were creepy.
When Puff Daddy and 50 Cent like threatened you with violence if you didn't vote.
Back when I think he was called Puff Daddy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I shouldn't. Well, no. Well, nah, he might have been.
I think he was P. Diddy. And then.
God,
and then
time is a flat
Diddy,
circle, you guys.
And then it was, you know.
Anyway, let's get our guest on.
All right, let's hop over to our guest. To New York City we go, and Denver area guy Tom Lay of Deadspin. Tom joins the show right now. We're super pumped for episode number 48. Guest on the Purple Dinosaur podcast is Deadspin's Tom Lay joins us, a Denver area guy who is now carrying the Denver sports flag high atop the Deadspin mountaintop. Tom, welcome to the show. What's going on, man?
Not much. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, man. So let's talk a little bit about your road to Deadspin, because Anthony and I were talking before we got on today. First of all, not only being one of my favorite Deadspin writers, like that would have been enough, because Anthony and I have been, you know, huge Deadspin fans for 10 years. But also, some of my favorite headlines ever have been from Tom Lay stories, which the first one of which, the Rockies are going to sock some goddamn dingers this year. That was from back in April. Nolan Arenado is having himself one hell of a defensive month. Goodbye to old-ass Jason Giambi, who refused to go down a villain. So the Rockies coverage, the best Rockies coverage on Deadspin comes from Tom. But Tom, let's talk first about, you're a Denver area guy and grew up in Lakewood. Tell us a little bit about, you know, I mean, your fandom and how you got to Deadspin and being a part of that now as one of the very rare breed of those poor people as unfortunate as us to have to root for these teams.
Yeah, I think I'm like the only Colorado sports fan I've met in New York. I don't think many of us make it out to the East Coast very often. So it is a little weird. I mean, there's no one to really, you know, relate to about that stuff. But yeah, I mean, I grew up in Lakewood, and I think the Rockies are probably the first team I really rooted for. I oddly enough am not really a huge Broncos fan. I don't really know why. I just never really.
That is a rarity.
Yeah, especially growing up.
Yeah, I don't. It doesn't make any sense. Like, I could care less about the Broncos, but like Rockies and Nuggets, I'm all in on, which doesn't mean, you know.
They're the two teams that don't win ever, right?
Yeah. For my own personal well-being, it's a bad decision. Yeah, I mean, the Rockies, you know, their inaugural season, I immediately was just all in. You know, sort of got into baseball that way. And, you know, started following the Nuggets. I think I got really into the Nuggets probably when the Melo draft happened. And then I went to college in Boulder. Was there during the World Series run, so that was a lot of fun. That kind of really, I guess, was the high point for all of us. And then I moved out here. I had an internship at Deadspin, and I've just been trying to write as many Rocky blogs as I can get.
I mean, what are people's reaction when you tell them you're a Rockies fan? For me, I'm not in Los Angeles, and I work at Fox Sports 1. So when I tell them that, it's like I have some kind of, like, communicable disease. Like, people, like, pat me on the head and go, oh, that's okay. Like, what's their reaction to
you? I actually kind of prefer it to being, like, the fan of a good team or a controversial team because nobody cares, you know? Like, 100%. If I tell someone I'm a Rockies fan, no one's just like, oh, Rockies fans suck. Or like, oh, you, like, how dare you? Like, nobody cares. Like, oh, that's fine. Like, if you tell someone, you know, oh, I'm a Cardinals fan, like, immediately they think things about you. Or if you're like, oh, I root for the Yankees, like, there are all these assumptions that come along with that. But, like, nobody cares enough about the Rockies to, like, form an opinion on me based on the fact that I like them. They're just like, oh, okay, that's fine. Which I prefer. So that's, I guess that's the one silver lining, is that there are no snap judgments based on rooting for a team that literally nobody cares about.
We earlier on this season, we started and we've continued on nights when Nolan does Nolan things, but Tom wrote the story.
I appreciate that.
Tom wrote one of our favorite pieces of the year early on, which was about how great of a season Nolan was having in the field. And after that, we just started dubbing really good Nolan plays our Tom Lay play of the day. And which obviously I would imagine is somewhat beneficial to you, because like when they're in Los Angeles, they start games at 10 o'clock Eastern time. So it's not really easy for you guys to just hang out and watch the Rockies at Dodger Stadium. But let me ask you this. When you are sitting around and talking to an editor or somebody, and you tell a coworker or a boss, like, hey, I want to put together a story about this random Rockies guy who more than likely nobody has heard of, what is the reaction to that? Like, because it's the same sort of thing when you talk to people outside of this area and you tell them you're a Rockies fan, like, they look at you like you're wearing, you know, like counterfeit Soviet jorts from the 80s or something. Like, it's just like you're this bizarre, weird. So what's the reaction when you're like, no, I really would love to write something about the Rockies?
We're actually pretty lucky here. We get a lot of leeway on what we're allowed. I mean, basically the only, you know, mandate from editors is that you just need to write about things that you're interested in. That's sort of the guiding principle. And Tim Marchman, our editor-in-chief, is like a huge baseball guy. He's been writing about baseball. He used to have a column in the New York Sun that's like for baseball nerds, kind of like if you know about Tim Richmond's New York Sun column, like, you really, you know what you're talking about. So he's like the best guy to bounce ideas off of and just talk about baseball with. He understands that Nolan Arenado is very good. Like, even though he plays for the Rockies, he knows that that's a good thing to write about. Like, he understands that Jason Giambi is a very interesting character and a good thing to write about. And as long as, I have something to say about it that isn't stupid and he finds interesting, it's free to go up on the site.
So with the Rockies taking 2 of 3 last week from the Cardinals, did you think at all about trolling former Deadspin founder Will Leach?
No.
I'm just throwing that out there.
We've been doing the Cardinals anti-Cardinals posts for, I think, 2 years now. And I don't regret, we stand behind them, but we're sort of at the point now where you have to pick your spots. It's like kind of like headshots only. Like, you can't, it sort of loses its meaning if you just make fun of the Cardinals at any chance. Leach personally upsets him when people don't like the Cardinals. It really does. Like, he's admitted this, like, he says this out loud. And so, I try to avoid it as much as possible of getting into it with him.
The weirdest thing about Will, too, is that not only is he a St. Louis Cardinals fan, but he's also an Arizona Cardinals fan, and that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And I think he admits, like, I don't know. I don't know, I'm a Cardinals fan. Whatever.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know. He just loves the bird, I guess.
Just loves, big old fan of the buzzsaw. Gotta love it.
Yeah.
All right, Tom, so you grew up in Colorado going to Rockies games. What are some of your favorite memories from either Old Mile High or a Coors Field? Because everyone seems to have like one like seminal moment when they were growing up, they realized that, hey, this is really a cool thing to be a part of.
Yeah, I think a lot about this game that I went to, and I've actually looked on Baseball Reference to try to find it, and like, I don't know if it's like half hallucination or not at this point because I was so young, but there's a game I went to with my brother and my aunt, and it was at Coors Field in the early years, right after it just opened. And it was some game where there was a really long rain delay, like an hour and a half or 2 hours. And after the rain delay, we got to move down to like right in home plate because nobody cared. And all I remember is this moment. There's some inning, I think based on my memory, what happened was there was a moment when Vinny Castilla had a grand slam that either like tied or put us ahead, and it happened like right when the lightning struck in the sky.
And like, the sun, that is awesome.
I think part of this might be just like I've invented it. Like you can't trust your memory, and so this might be I'm just like mashing things together. But when people ask like, "Oh, what's your favorite moment as a Rockies fan?" I always say that, and I actually have no idea if it really happened, but something like that happened to me in like disparate parts, maybe. But that's the thing that I always remember. And I mean, the World Series run, I got to go to, game 4 of the division series.
Nice.
That, you know, went up on the like very last seat in upper deck in left field and still had a good time. So yeah, I would say, you know, the playoff run is probably still the highlight. There was a 2020 game that I remember staying up for and watching that we won, I think.
Oh, yeah.
San Diego?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Spielberg took a walk-off or something like that, and I was in college, and I was so upset that I had stayed up that late. and then they won, and I was like, okay, I guess that was worth it.
Well, Tom, let's talk about this. I mean, obviously, they're playing decent baseball. I mean, you know how it is around here. Shockingly, the Denver area media will not give them credit for playing decent baseball, but like they're 5 games right under 500, whatever it is. At this point, I mean, your thoughts on this current team, because they're obviously the conversation will forever and always be, what do they do with Tulo? What do they do with Cargo? But there's so much talent around them right now. I think a lot of people think that Walt Weiss, to a certain extent, is holding this team down somewhat with his inexperience as a manager, that he's been learning on the job now for 3 years, and at times he's still frustrated the hell out of people. But what are the things you like about this team right now? And if you had your druthers, what would be some of the things you think would push this a little bit past, oh, they're playing decent baseball, to, hey, this team's actually contending?
I mean, I really like the construction of the lineup. And I think that as far as like defensive units go, we were in pretty good shape. I mean, I don't know. The thing that always just bums me out the most is the pitching. Like, it's just, especially this sort of era of baseball, like you look around the league and it's like such a pitching dominant league now, and there are so many good pitchers, and we just never have any of them. And like, yeah. it's not even like I wish we had like Chris Sale or Corey Kluber. Like, there are pitchers below that tier that would still be like the best pitcher on our team. Like,
I wish we had Matt Garza, you know?
Exactly. Like, I wish we had, like, I don't know, like, Drew Hutchison. He's fine. But, like, he would be so good. Like, that's just, we never get anybody like that. And, you know, we go through, like, Drew Pomeranz and Alex Light and, you know, all these guys. And I just want someone who can throw, you know, 97 and has a changeup. And that would be great.
I'm just going to throw this out there. Tom, if you really want me to, I can go down to the Rockies dugout store on the 16th Street Mall, and they are still selling on the clearance rack Drew Pomeranz t-shirt jerseys. So in case you want one, you know, we'll make that happen.
I will pass on that. They're really still selling those?
Oh, yeah, they still are. It's like a rack of, like, Yoli Chacin and Drew Pomeranz and, like, a whole – it's amazing. It is an amazing clearance rack, let me tell you.
And it's just, I mean, it's depressing because we always get, you know, I mean, I don't pay that much as close attention to, like, you know, the prospects of everybody coming up as I used to now that I live in New York. But, like, I remember, you know, hearing a lot about Eddie Butler. I was like, all right, this guy is probably cool. And then I watched the game, you know, he has his 92 mile an hour sinker. and he's just, you know, I'm just like, where are the guys who are just like plainly very, very good? And I don't know. I just wish we had some pitchers. I don't know how we do that. I don't know how we get that. But a lot of other teams seem to have no problem doing it. Like the Cardinals, every pitcher they have is great. It would just be
and
nice
they
have, like,
do it with guys there. From Denver too. Like they brought Marco Gonzalez up last year from Fort Collins, and it's like, wait a minute, why? What? How come?
Yeah.
Why not him? What?
Yeah. Like Joe Kelly.
Yeah.
Got rid of, and like he kind of sucks now, but sometimes he's kind of good, and it's like.
Hey,
you know, Cardinals didn't even need him. On our team, he'd be, you know, all our eggs at the same time. He'd be the one guy.
Yeah, it seems like we've always been trying to figure out what we can do on the pitching side, because the best pitcher in history for us is Baldo, basically, right? I mean, he was the one guy where you had for at least a year and a half stretch there where you could really believe, like, you want to go to the ballpark every single day and you'll see something amazing from him. Beyond that, it's really tough to find another pitcher that's really been even like very, very good on a national stage for the Rockies.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing about the Baldo season was like that at least like showed us that like it can work. Like if you have a pitcher who is really good and can throw super hard and has a, you know, a decent array of pitches, like he can be really good in a Rockies unit. Like he can win games and have a low ERA. And so the hope was that it sort of shattered the myth that, like, you can't ever have pitching on a Rockies team. But, you know, since Ubaldo, we haven't really had anybody who can do anything.
Yeah, the one guy that we do think is going to be pretty solid, he's a guy who throws, you know, upper 90s, John Gray, just had a start last night.
Was,
very, very well in his last six,
ask you
7,
guys
8 starts.
To tell me, I don't know anything about John Gray. Tell me about John Gray. Is he
overall pick at Oklahoma in 2013. Throws super, super hard, throws mid-90s to upper 90s, got a wipeout slider. He's been working on his changeup. They've been making him do that in the minor leagues. But he has had a really bad start to the year. Last 8 starts, ERA well under 3 in the Pacific Coast League, which is really, really tough to do. It's a very good hitter's environment. And my bold prediction is that he will make his next start next, what is it, Tuesday, in a Rockies uniform. He's the number one overall pick for the Rockies and the number overall prospect for the Rockies. In their system for the last couple of years.
Here's the thing about John Gray, and like we have said this multiple times, they've never had a pitcher as talented as John Gray. Like in the entirety of the organization, they've never had somebody with John Gray's talent. Ubaldo, maybe you could have made that argument. Even Franklin Morales was a huge prospect at the time when he was coming up.
Yeah,
and Chacin was for time, but like Chacin's stuff wasn't what John Gray's stuff was. So that being said, he's probably the clear-cut most talented kid they've ever had. But also that being said, they're the Rockies, and we know what will more than likely happen. So that's
exciting. Right. Well, I'm all in on John Gray.
Good. Good, Tom. Also, just for the record, Anthony made that prediction last week, and it didn't come true. So
you know what? Bold predictions can be reused, okay?
I'm on board with the second bold prediction.
Tom Lay is jumping on board the John Gray bandwagon. Love it. Love it. Tom, we can't thank you enough, man. This has been a ton of fun for us. We've been huge fans of your work for a long time, and it's been fun to watch, you know, a Rocky story here and there pop up on the site under fantastic headlines and with awesome stuff. And, by the way, it was very fitting that we got an interview with Tom today, because yesterday Tom put together maybe my favorite story that he has ever done, which was under the headline "No More Bulldog Mascots," in which he argued there should be other dog mascots. Why do we have so many damn bulldog mascots? Everybody's got a bulldog.
I'm glad you're on board with that.
The best was just there was one photo like 3/4 of the way down the story, and it was via the Associated Press, and the caption on it is just "a good doggy." I loved it.
That was
I love
a good
that story.
That was a good dog.
Tom, thanks a ton, man. This has been awesome, and we'll do it again sometime.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, anytime. This is fun.
Tom Lea, Deadspin, our guest on episode number 48 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. A big, big thanks to Tom, and it's fun talking to
John Gray bandwagon.
Yeah, first of all, talking a guy onto the John Gray bandwagon, and second of all, it's just fun talking to a guy who's in that position where it's like, I love how he said, like, when I tell people that I'm a Rockies fan, they don't really know what to do. Like, they don't judge me. You judge, and that's true. When he said, like, if somebody tells you you're a Cardinals fan, they're a Cardinals fan, you automatically have thoughts in your head about them, and that is true. That is very true.
Yes. Sorry, Ben Hockman.
Yeah, sorry, Ben. By the way, Ben, if you did not see Ben's tweet yesterday, go find it on he's at Hockman on Twitter. And this is going to be a really cool column, I think. Ben's putting together a column based around text message conversations that you have with a mom or dad or somebody who lives in a different city about your love for a baseball team. And I think that's a really, really cool idea. Ben, the stuff that Ben does on, like, family and you know, those kind of meaningful columns, Ben does so well. And I'm really excited for that one when it comes out. So go find that tweet and email him your stuff if you fall into that line. But for now, we're going to move on episode number 48 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. And the first – I think this is the first one we've done in season so far this year. But we're going to jump on to – by the way, I don't know if, like, the Russians are invading or something, but can you hear, like, the fighter jets outside my house?
No.
Like, there's been, like, fighter jets zooming around all over Capitol Hill.
Is Red Dawn actually happening?
That's weird. Or that video game Homefront. Are the North Koreans invading?
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, but it's the Jason Ross Memorial edition of Ask PDP. That's exciting. We haven't done an Ask PDP in forever. And let's start it off today. Let's go first. Anthony, I will pick one and ask you this PDP question. And we will start with our good pal Jack Hayer, who I met at a Rockies game the day that all the PDP t-shirts arrived. Jack showed up and he was in his PDP shirt and I was wearing mine. And we were instant best friends. And Jack says, quote, "What changes would you make to the All-Star game?"
Well, first of all, take out that stupid home field advantage stuff. Yeah, on it. That's just absolutely ridiculous. That's one of the dumbest things that Bud Selig ever did, and that's saying something. And I would definitely take out the fan voting. I hate the fan voting.
Yeah,
it's cool. If you're a Royals fan, you're gonna have the entire starting nine in the AL.
Makes sense.
As the starting lineup.
Makes sense.
And I think it was a good pal Connor, Rockies versus Connor, who tweeted out that, you know, the All-Star game stuff really bugs me because in 15 years, Harold Reynolds is going to use the All-Star game to say how good baseball players were. Use it as a measuring stick.
That is like, true.
Well, this guy went to 15 All-Star games.
This guy started in an All-Star game.
He was voted in by the fans. Omar Infante is not a Hall of Famer because he got voted in the All-Star game by dumbass Royals fans in the year 2015. I'm sorry. That's exactly what's going to happen, too. He's right on the money there. Like, oh, look at those All-Star appearances. It was done by stupid fans stuffing the ballot box.
Ken Griffey Jr. was voted as a starter in an All-Star game in a season in, I want to say it was 2003, and he was not named actually to the roster because he did not play a single game that year.
That was like when Allen Iverson was voted onto the All-Star game for the NBA when he was playing in Turkey.
Right, exactly. not so good. Maybe it was 2004. Griffey played like around 40 games in the first half and was voted, I think, a starter in the All-Star game. But that's, you know, it's fan voting.
Yeah.
All right, so those are your answers. Take out home field advantage.
The fan voting gets all those people who are undeserving of being on the All-Star team. And then, however they do in that game, determines where home field advantage is in the World Series.
Makes sense.
How effed up is that?
Makes sense.
God, that's so stupid. We have a whole podcast about how stupid the All-Star game is. I'm
going
to be there this year. Watch it on Fox. I will be there, actually.
It is still the best All-Star game in sports.
It is.
Easily. By far.
I'll be able to take it down from the inside this year. I'll be there with the Fox crew.
Do it.
So.
All right,
Tyler.
PDP. Fire away.
What fast food / regional chain restaurant that's not in Colorado would you most want to see open here? That is from our buddy Will C at Will_E_777.
Will, I love. Will's one of our favorite guys on Twitter. And this is one of the best questions. And I know that it was one of the best questions of the day yesterday because I thought about it for like the rest of the night. The easy the easy answer here is In-N-Out.
True.
That's
the
easy
one.
In-N-Out's fantastic. And, you know, it's – there have been rumors that it would be coming here for a while. That's like too easy to me. And I was starting to think of other things and, you know, like there's a burrito place in LA that I went to when I came out and visited you, that I don't even remember the name of it. And it was pretty good. But then I was like, no, it's, you know, we live in Denver. Chipotle's here and Illegal Pizza's here. And we're not bringing in any more burrito place.
You guys have Chipotle there?
Yeah. Can you believe it?
Maybe not the first one, I'm just saying.
And then I started thinking, like, well, maybe like Shake Shack, but I think Shake Shack is unbelievably overrated. I had it once at Citi Field, and like, it's just funny because like New Yorkers are like, oh, what a great burger. And it's like, yeah, it's because you people don't have actual meat out there.
Yeah. You know, it's fine. Yeah.
But I, you know, I, so this is what I switched to: Southern fast food chicken places. And either Zaxby's, which you and I frequented in Myrtle Beach, or Bojangles. And I think I would go with Bojangles because Bojangles is like your classic fast food place. Bojangles is like, it's a chicken and biscuits place. You drive up, they have like breakfast biscuits. They have amazing chicken sandwiches. I think I would go with Bojangles.
And I would take Zaxby's. Bojangles is great. I would take Zaxby's out of that, 100%.
Yeah, I really like those.
Love Zaxby's. Zaxby's was so good.
Also, if anybody even comes at us with Moe's,
no,
you're done.
Definitely
you're
not.
You're gone. You're
broken
out.
Moe's.
Ugh, Moe's. We might even have a Moe's here, and they're just so terrible that I don't even notice it.
We had Moe's so much in Myrtle Beach.
Yeah, and it was like not at all. Moe's, for those who don't know, is like a Chipotle ripoff, but it's not. What's the word?
It's like a Qdoba ripoff.
Yeah, exactly. It's not what you would call, what's the term? Good.
Edible?
At all.
Yeah.
At all. And it was like, We went there because there was no Chipotle where we lived in Myrtle Beach, and it was just not – it's like you go there, and it's like you would have been better off eating a Taco Bell because it's just not good. And there are people who swear by Moe's, and those people are clinically
insane. They love it. I don't get it.
Those people are insane.
Yeah.
Okay, Anthony.
Next question.
Next Ask PDP is from at @thinkertune. Quote, it speaks volume of where the mistake came from. Sit up at APC Nigeria for a house divided can never stand. Hashtag
that's
ask
the
PDP.
Other Ask PDP.
Oh, though. That's not our Ask PDP. That's about Nigerian.
It's
democracy.
So weird.
Okay, this is a great one from our good pal Hayden Kane. And Hayden, again, one of our absolute Twitter favorites. I love Hayden. And Hayden asked, quote, which current Rockies player would be most likely to have a Torrey Hunter-esque meltdown on the field?
Can we talk about how much of a dick Torrey Hunter is?
Yeah.
And how he gets a constant pass.
Torrey Hunter is a terrible person.
So he goes on record all the time about how much he hates gay people and how he would never want a gay teammate, which is just adorable.
I believe he called a reporter a
prick. He called him a prick.
Right, called him a prick.
And he kept calling him a prick.
Over and over.
Over
throughout a press conference.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very professional. Very professional.
And yet he gets a pass. Like, oh, Torrey Hunter's so great. Why?
Because he
gives you a good quote. That's why.
Right, exactly. Because every once in a while he'll come out with like an honest quote. He freaked out the other night, threw his batting gloves, ripped his jersey off on a strike three call.
Watch
the video on MLB.com. He's a
It's just how you want a 38-year-old veteran to comport himself when he's trying to lead a team who's a very good team.
Yeah, very
this
good
year,
team this year.
Yeah.
Okay, so your current Rockies player, who would be most likely to do that?
I mean, Tulo.
Yeah, it's totally Tulo. It's like not even a question, really. Like, I started thinking about it, and I was like, all right, I can see maybe this guy, maybe that guy.
I can see Arenado if he gets really.
Yeah, Nolan, I think, is probably, he would be along those lines. But
oh,
Nolan,
Tulo, easy, though.
You could, like, distract Nolan with a candy bar, and he'd be like, okay, I'm sorry. But
Tulo, he's adorable.
I think Tulo, absolutely.
Tulo, I mean, like last night on the broadcast when he flew out to left, I think it was an audible F-bomb.
Oh, yeah,
that
it was
apparently
great.
Fox Sports Florida had to apologize for.
Ryan Freemeyer tweeted into us and said he was watching the Fox Sports Florida broadcast and apologized on air for it. That was and somebody else tweeted at us because I compared it to Kenyon Martin because Kmart used to just like under the basket, he would just scream F-bombs up
all the
at
time.
The crowd mic, it seemed like. And somebody tweeted at us, I think it was Roxcat tweeted at us and said, the only thing that was missing was a get that shit out of here, because that was Kmart's other big line.
Yeah, that's right.
It was great. But yeah, no, it's got to be Tulo, right?
It's an easy one. I like that one.
It has to be.
That's great. All right. From Zach Fogg at Zach Fogg Sports.
I love this one.
What percentage of first and third base umpires are actually paying attention when they're asked to appeal a swing?
That is a great question. Zach Fogg,
that's an awesome question.
Zach's a producer for Sandy Clough and Scott Hastings at The Fan and does some, I believe, on-air stuff at another station in town. But we have you want to talk about local media legends, which I know is a big conversation this week. Sandy Clough really is one of those. Sandy Clough has been around forever. And, you know, your opinion on Sandy Clough, if you like him, if you don't like him, he's been around for a very, very long time and has been very successful. So Zach does a lot of work with him. And Zach submitted what I think is a great question. And I first really started
wondering
this. We had
some really good submissions here.
I know. We had some really good Ask PDPs this week. I first really started wondering this when we were in the minors, because in the minor leagues at our level, at Class A Advanced where Anthony and I worked, and then later on I was in Double A where it changes a little bit, but there are only two umpires.
Right.
So when you appeal, you're not always appealing to a guy down the baseline. No, sometimes you're appealing to
like
a guy
who's
behind the mound. Exactly. It's the exact same process as high school. So in the major leagues, because that started making me wonder, like, when you appeal to a guy who's behind the mound, who's been trying to make sure that, like, he's watching for a balk, he's making sure that the runner's not doing anything crazy, there's, you know, not a fight behind him. I don't know what the hell they're doing. But you could tell that there were times when a guy would appeal, and he would stand there, the field umpire would stand there for a second, and then go, no, he didn't. He didn't swing.
Yeah. Okay. And you have no angle at all anyway when you're standing behind the pitcher's mound if a guy crossed the plane of the plate. You have no angle whatsoever. That always just tickled me.
So Zach Fogg's question is on the major league level, the first and third base umpires, what percentage? If I have to put an actual percentage on it, I think it's probably 75%.
I wouldn't even go that high.
But
you think Bach and Bob Davidson is paying attention to swings? I think he's just staring at the pitcher the entire time when he's on first or third base.
I think it's 75% in a tacit paying attention sort of stance. Like, I think it's like you're vaguely aware. If I had to pick, if you're 100% just focused on the swing of a hitter, I think it only happens that way if you are working in a bases empty situation. Because then you have nothing else to take your focus away from it. So I don't know, maybe 50%?
Yeah. I'll go 40. I think they're just guessing
most
of the time.
What a thankless job. You cannot pay me enough money to be a major league umpire.
Why the hell would you ever want to be an umpire?
Or an NFL referee, or like, at least in the NBA, you could just be a total dick.
Yeah.
You know, like, at least you have like that recourse in the NBA, like Joey Crawford.
And no one ever says, like, oh man, great call, ump.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And no one ever said
that.
When they
never
get
happened.
It correct, and they do get it correct a majority of the time.
That has never happened. Okay, next up, from our good pal Jake Shapiro at Shapalicious, quote, evaluate Walt, where he's improved, what he's done that you've liked / disliked, ultimately, should he keep his gig?
Ooh, that's a loaded question, Jake.
Yeah.
We'll try to answer as succinctly as possible. Good question, but he's had issues this year, especially with the game being a little too fast for him. And this is his third year, which I think is a problem. I think he started out this year with a new regime, doing a lot more defensive shifting. He's the only National League manager to have his team in the top five in terms of defensive shifts put on this year, by the way. I think I checked the other day, and the Rockies were fourth. The only NL team in the top five. There's only two or three in the top ten even. So I think he's adapted better this year than he has. But I think sometimes you still wonder why Boone Logan is in the goddamn game
in a big situation, a high-leveled situation,
facing a right-handed batter. You know, you have those numbers in front of you. This is not a sabermetric thing at all. Boone Logan can't get right-handed batters out. He gets left-handed batters out very, very well, actually. He cannot get right-handed batters out. You know, I think he still operates under how a player was before coming to Colorado.
Yeah.
Like, Boone Logan used to be a guy that can get out righties and lefties. But he is not that guy anymore. Or he's not that guy right now, at least.
Here's the thing with Boone Logan. And, you know, people want to dump on him for the struggles that he has had. But as Jordan Freemeyer has continually pointed out, every time that the conversation has turned to Boone Logan and he's tweeted at us, he is still very good against left-handed hitters. Against lefties this year, lefties are 3-for-28 against Boone Logan. The problem is he's faced right-handed batters for 51 at-bats. They've gone 18-for-51. That's a .353 average. They've hit three homers. They're OPSing .979 against
him. I can't believe it's even that good, to be honest.
He's a loogie guy. I mean, that's what it is.
And
so stop putting him in high-leverage situations against right-handed hitters, and that, I think, is the complaint against Walt.
Yes. There are very few things that a manager can really control, I think. And I think lineup construction is one, shifting is another, and the bullpen.
Right.
The bullpen is the big one. And a lot of guys have never figured that out. Ask Dusty Baker.
Right.
So, you don't want to knock Walt and say, like, oh, he's a worthless manager because he can't figure out how to do a bullpen because, you know, it's his third year and some guys never figure it out.
Right.
But at some point, you have to learn by what the numbers are telling you. If it's not the numbers, then fine. Do the eye test. Boone Logan came in to face a right-handed batter in that game on Tuesday, and the first pitch he saw to Peter Borges, dude hit a 470-foot home run. That's Peter Borges. That's not Giancarlo Stanton.
Yep, that went well.
So, dude, do I think Walt should keep his job? I think he's done some good things this year, some bad things. I think he'll get another year. I think we'll see him at the beginning of the 2016 season. But I think if they struggle and see the same things that they've seen for the last 3 years, I don't think Jeff Bridich will have a problem making a change or finding some other voice in that clubhouse.
That's what I'll be interested to watch is, you know, Jeff Bridich didn't make that hire. You know, right. Jeff Bridich was in charge of player development. He maybe had some input on Walt Weiss, but this is, you know, kind of the equivalent of, you know, when you hire a new coach in college football, let's say, and that guy has to bring on his guys.
His guys.
You know what I mean? Yep. So, yeah, I think that will be the most interesting thing to watch is the relationship between. And we know that Bridich and Weiss have a good relationship. That was one of the things that Jeff Bridich hit on most in his introductory press conference, which is I'm going to talk to Walt. We're going to have a lot of open communication. He's going to have a lot of input.
Which is good.
Right, exactly. You want that. You don't want a general manager who, for some reason, has to have an office in the clubhouse and, you know, is kind of a jerk to everybody, is what we heard.
Yeah.
So that part is good, but you do kind of wonder how long it'll be before Jeff Bridich is like, I didn't make this. I didn't make this hire. We got to go in a different direction.
Yeah.
So
maybe he'll put himself in charge like Dan Jennings.
Yeah, it could work. Why not? Seems like it's
going
right. Well.
This is a rapid fire ones, but I think we're very, very long today.
Yes, so. I think we're right.
All right. This is from your dad.
Yeah.
Your take on the new Pizza Hut hot dog infused culinary clusterfuck.
This thing is such a joke.
That's from your dad.
Don't you love it? My dad just
Yellow
drops.
Dog Dad at Dennis Mall.
I'm sure Patrick Saunders blocked my dad on Twitter. The thing, the Fresno Grizzlies, a AAA affiliate now of the Houston Astros, they came out with a thing a few weeks ago called the Frankenslice, in which it was a hot dog, and they did it for like a zombie themed night at the ballpark. It was a hot dog in the crust of a pizza slice.
It was awesome. Yeah.
And it was great. And that's a great minor league baseball thing to do.
Totally.
But then Pizza Hut just rips it off. Like, what? Yeah. No.
No thanks.
That's disgusting. Get out of
here.
I'm sure it was pretty good at the game in Fresno.
I wouldn't even go that far.
Well, like, for minor league gross food. But, like, the thing from Pizza Hut, ugh.
Yeah.
I feel like I would die having one bite of that. First of all, I feel like I would die having one bite of Pizza Hut anyway because I had a friend in college who worked at a Pizza Hut when he was in high school, and he told me the way they cook the dough at Pizza Hut is they have giant buckets of grease, and they just dunk the dough balls into the buckets of grease before they cook them.
Sounds about right.
So that's why I never go to Pizza Hut now.
Yeah.
Also, it's gross and it's an abomination to pizza. what else do we have? Do we have? Oh, we did get one submission today for Ask PDP from our good pals at Rockspile. And this is one that I feel like is very good for Anthony. Quote, what's your favorite Christmas movie and why isn't it Die Hard?
It's a movie starring Goldberg, the wrestler.
Oh, I thought
Santa's Sleigh.
I thought you meant Goldberg from the Mighty Ducks.
No. Starring Goldberg the Wrestler. It's called Santa's Sleigh.
I think we talked about Sleigh this.
Sleigh is spelled S-L-A-Y. the opening scene has, like, James Caan and Chris Kattan and Rebecca Gayhart and Fran Drescher. And they all just get murdered by Santa in just hilariously gory ways. But Goldberg basically is a demon. He lost a game of curling to an old man who he thought was an old man, but is actually an angel.
Totally.
And so he was doomed to be a nice person every December 25th for whatever 2000 years or whatever. And then finally the gig was up. And so he went back to being evil and started killing people and they had to figure out a way to stop him.
If I had a nickel for every time that's happened to me.
Yeah, I know. Right. But no, it's awesome. Santa's Sleigh. Go check it out.
All right, that's going to wrap up this week's edition of PDP Ask PDP. That's just really quickly we'll dive into, and we wanted to get to a lot more of this today, but I think both of us super excited about the way the draft went for the Rockies. Major League Baseball draft is a total crapshoot.
We didn't even talk about the draft at all.
The draft at all. But there's some really, really good analysis, as always, on purplerow.com. There is a fantastic story that was put together by Joe LaMire for USA Today about Brendan Rodgers. That was from, I believe, Draft Day Morning, I think that story ran. But there's a great, great story about Brendan Rodgers and about how the Rockies kind of fell in love with him. You know, what's funny is that Dante Bichette saw Brendan Rodgers play as a six-year-old and said, that kid's going to be a first-round pick. And he was by Dante Bichette's team, which is pretty cool.
Awesome.
So go check out all that stuff, but really excited. Brendan Rodgers seems like a great pick. The Rockies, I think, really made out very, very well with Mike Nikorak with the 27th pick, the pitcher out of Stroudsburg High School in Pennsylvania. Jonathan Mayo from MLB.com said, in a few years, we really might look back at this and see that Nickerack was the best pitcher taken in this draft. The Rockies took four high school players with their first four picks for the first time since 1998, according to Purple Row. That draft really only yielded Chu Freeman, who was...
I think 5 of 5. Didn't they go with the first five or high school picks as well?
It's interesting, too, because the Rockies have not followed that route at all, really, in franchise history. They've been very content to go with college guys who are a bit closer to the big leagues, but they went the high school route. And, you know, it's going to be a while before we see these guys at the major league level. Drafting Brendan Rodgers does not mean anything for Troy Tulowitzki. You know,
no,
drafting Mike Nickerack does not mean anything for anybody in the rotation, but they'll be fun to watch. Rodgers has reportedly agreed to terms already with the Rockies. He hasn't signed yet, but he's agreed to terms. And the short season teams get started next week.
Next week,
so
right? Yeah.
I would assume he'll head to either Grand Junction or Boise to get started. And this is going to be fun, man. It's going to be fun to watch him climb.
It's going to be a lot of fun. The Rockies, pretty much by all accounts, made out like bandits.
Yeah. It's not often that you see the Rockies in the winner column for something, but they were on pretty much everything. When it comes to the draft, first early draft reviews from day one. And so it's exciting. I mean, Brendan Rodgers was the consensus top talent in the draft, and the Rockies got him at third overall. So
that's exciting. Pretty awesome.
All right, we're way over. Supersized edition of the PDP. Coming up next week, Anthony's going to get us Pete Rose from Fox Sports.
That's not
one.
Going to happen.
And
still not going to happen.
No, I believe Ryan Parker from Baseball Prospectus will join us next week. We're going to talk a lot of Tapia. I actually talked with Raimel Tapia for a story for Rockies Magazine last week. Talked to him through an interpreter, and so we are going to have that story in the July edition of Rockies Magazine. But we'll talk with Ryan Parker from Baseball Prospectus, we hope, next week. And until then, we'll enjoy watching some decent baseball, you guys.
Yeah, decent baseball. Go see Jurassic World.
Yeah, go see Jurassic World, apparently.
PDP, sponsored by Pavilions and Jurassic World.
You can follow the PDP on Twitter at Purple DinoCast. You can follow Anthony at Master Tones. I'm at Tyler Mon. Rate, review, subscribe on iTunes. We always love that. You can also subscribe on the Stitcher app if you got an Android device. And you can check us out at PurpleRow.com and ESPNDenver.com as well. And visit Humble Monster and get yourself a Purple Dinosaur Podcast t-shirt. New designs coming out soon.
That should be our new thing.
Coming
new designs. T-shirts coming out soon.
This has been like 5 weeks now that I've been saying that. But no, we really do have some cool stuff in the works. Talk to you guys next week. Bye. Bye.
You're gross.
What?
All right.
Oh, we could do, okay. Oh my goodness gracious.
Boom, 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 boom.
Yeah. All right. I got nothing.